You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat. I'm your host, Lance White. Before I introduce tonight's guest, I am asking for your financial support to keep my show on the air until 2013. My book, Tales of a Zany Mystic, is now available for purchase in paperback or on Kindle at Amazon Books. You can make a donation in any amount or sponsor 1 week's show for $50. If you're a regular listener who uses Kindle, please support my work by purchasing Tales of a Zany Mystic for $2.99 at Amazon Books. To find out more about donations, sponsorship, or getting a signed copy, write me directly at zanymystic59@yahoo.com. Thank you. Tonight, my guest is Alfred Lambermont Weber. Alfred is a futurist whose book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and the Law in the Universe, founded the science of intelligent civilizations in the multiverse and expresses a positive timeline for Earth. Alfred's 1974 book, The Age of Cataclysm, integrates Earth sciences and the psychic remote viewing of Edgar Cayce of a global coastal event and expresses the catastrophic timeline for Earth. He is also the chairman of the Mars Anomaly Research Society, educating about life on Mars. A graduate of Yale University, Yale Law School, and a Fulbright scholar, Alfred has taught economics at Yale University and constitutional law at the University of Texas. He was general counsel to the New York City Environmental Protection Administration, a futurist at Stanford Research Institute, and is a judge on the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal. I just caught up with Alfred at the recent UFO conference in Santa Clara, so let's welcome him to the show now. Hi, Alfred. How are you?
Great. You know, really, just fine, thank you.
Good. Well, you do so much wonderful work in contacting people who have information that is not at all readily available to the public. It's not available on the mainstream, underground, or even within the New Age groups. You really kind of stand as an island in that sense with Exopolitics and the interviews that you do on the radio.
Go ahead. Thank you.
I was thinking, since we're so close to the end of 2012 and we have elections here in the United States, I thought I'd first of all, check with you to see what you feel is the most important topic that we should be aware of from all the research that you do and the people that you talk to on your show.
Oh, wow. That's
really
a tall order.
It's
funny because I've been speaking over the last 24 to 48 hours, as you can imagine, about the impacts of what appears to be an environmental war, HAARP-created false flag attack, namely Hurricane Sandy, mm-hmm. and what its impact on the 2012 elections would be. So I say, well, what's a good topic to speak about with Zany Mystic on a fireside chat? And I'm here looking at an article that's really kind of caught my eye,
okay.
because it's part of a book that I'm gotten through a first draft of, called Dimensions, The Ecology of the Multiverse.
Ooh.
And the headline of this article says, near-death experiences occur when soul leaves nervous system. And then it goes on, a near-death experience occurs when quantum substances, which form the soul, leave the nervous system and enter the universe at large, according to a groundbreaking theory proposed by two eminent scientists. According to this idea, consciousness is a program for a quantum computer in the brain, which can persist in the universe even after death, explaining the perception of those who have near-death experiences. Dr. Stuart Homaroff, Professor Emeritus for the Departments of Anesthesiology and Psychology and Director of the Consciousness Center for Consciousness Studies at the University of Arizona, has advanced a quasi-religious theory. It is based on a quantum theory of consciousness he and British physicist Sir Roger Penrose have developed that holds that the essence of our soul is contained inside structures called microtubules within brain cells. They have argued that our experience of consciousness is a result of quantum gravity effects within these microtubules, a theory they have dubbed orchestrated objective reduction. And thus it is held that our souls are more than the interaction of neurons in the brain. Mm-hmm. They are, in fact, constructed from the very fabric of the universe and may have existed since the beginning of time. So the article goes on, and I said, wow, that's really something that I'd like to talk to or talk with Zany Mystic about. We can talk about the selection, I like to talk about it, it's kind of Sturm und Drang, thunder and lightning, and it's pretty depressing stuff in my judgment.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I've been finding that to be particularly true the last, let's say the last few days to the last few weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just gotten to the point where I can't even take in the information. It's just too much. It's interesting you would start with this, because one of my favorite guests that I've had on a number of times is the near-death researcher PMH Atwater. I think she's 82 now. She's coming out with her 12th book.
Oh, my Lord.
She has had three near-death experiences and has interviewed over 2,000 people personally and over 200 to 300 indigos and crystals and the rest of it. She's coming out with her new book, which has to do with the fifth race or the sixth race. I can't remember which. And she is a firm believer that, consciousness mirrors society, and that we are approaching an extinction-level event, or an event that indicates that we are going to be perhaps compressed through heat, not necessarily physical heat, but through the heat of friction, which creates the momentum to compress coal and become the diamond. So that's kind of a common esoteric theme in a lot of Sufi and ancient esoteric traditions, that there is a process of densification, and that there's a moment when consciousness is suspended in a colloidal state. And I thought that was absolutely fantastic, that prior to a near-death experience, and we could be having one here on the planet together, because there's so many ways that this can that it's coming about through all the ways that you said. We can go on a laundry list, and that would take up the whole hour.
Right.
But, we're in this now, and it seems that it's forcing people, myself included, to just stop. And this stoppage of, this external force is like the reverse Merkaba, where it literally stops and your consciousness expands outside the body. So it's conceivable that that's the kind of event that we're preparing for, that all of this seeming unconsciousness and negativity and evil, if you want to call it that, which is going on in the world, is preparation for some kind of massive global consciousness event.
Right. And that's very much in sort of in the mainstream of the mainstream of the 2012 literature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you read people like David Wilcock, and they talk about a collective near-death experience, that would be one way of describing the biology and psychology and physics, even quantum physics, of, quote, the ascension process.
Right.
And that is an area that I've always found great joy in speaking about. That was very much a line of presentation that I first gave at the Barcelona Exopolitics Conference in 2009, and then again at the Awaken Aware Conference in Los Angeles in 2010. And then my own thinking kind of evolved, and I actually sat down and wrote a book which emerged out of a request by Oxford University Press, which is a division of Oxford University.
Yes.
And they wrote me and asked me if I was interested in writing a book on extraterrestrial law.
And so
I said sure, and so I sat down and I said, wow, this is a real challenge, because when I sat down, I realized that there's no satisfactory typology of extraterrestrial civilizations or of intelligent civilizations in the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
There are different ones out there. There's one, the Kardashev scale, which I think Dr. Michio Kaku has made popular. And that's, you know, you have zero level civilizations and one level, two level, three level, and the three levels can make their own galaxy. The one levels are advanced enough that they live off of the energy of the solar system and kind of what's in interstitial space. Mm-hmm. And many civilizations who are at a zero level, which is our level, at least at the public sphere, self-destruct before they advance to zero. And we're kind of at that point. Mm-hmm. Will we self-destruct before we get to a level one? And so there's that. But I realized then in writing this book about extraterrestrial civilizations and the law, that extraterrestrial civilizations can't really be characterized by the type of energy that they use. That is, that there's a more fundamental typology to them. Mm-hmm. And going and looking at I finally settled and realized that the most vital data here, or the most vital insight, is the way that extraterrestrial or intelligent civilizations describe themselves. And what they say is they describe themselves in terms of the dimension in which they're based.
Mm-hmm.
And by dimension, we mean a discrete energy, bounded energy range,
mm-hmm.
that relates to a number of criteria. We're in time and space, so the two sort of the four actual factors that we are time and the three dimensions of space, height, mm-hmm. width, and depth. And as you one goes to other dimensions, there are other criteria or definers of that dimension, which we can't even imagine, you know, which may include light, love, and other factors.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized then, and I developed the dimension-based typology of intelligent civilizations.
Oh.
And from that, there evolved the model which I saw, which is that intelligent civilizations in the multiverse live in a dimensional ecology,
mm-hmm.
and they sort of intersect in a dimensional ecology. For example, we have the intelligent civilization of souls,
mm-hmm.
Which reside in a dimension that we can call the interlife. And they enter through interdimensional portals into, say, our third dimension of time-space,
uh-huh.
or any other dimension in the extrapolitical dimension of what we call the physical universe,
mm-hmm.
and then incorporate themselves into fetuses for an incarnational experience in the extrapolitical or physical universe, that this dimensional ecology model with interdimensional portals and teleportation and all of these kind of discrete phenomena suddenly made very transparent what the spiritual text and religious texts and all of the belief systems have been talking about, of heavens and hells and incarnations, mm-hmm. and that is that there are various dimensions and it's mm-hmm. a dimensional ecology, and so that was a languaging or a model that then I developed into the draft of a book called Dimensions, the Ecology of the Multiverse, which is now going into its second draft, and it'll be it's one of the books that I'm working on now that'll be out over the next couple of years.
Oh,
but this article and this theory feeds directly into that book, and it sounds like these two gentlemen have made some significant advances on the physics of the soul.
Mm.
Since working on this book and working this way, it's given me a great appreciation and an ability to categorize and manage and think about and talk about the information that has been traditionally thought to be part of our era, and that is the coming together or integration of spirituality and science. That is what traditionally has been in spirituality through texts or mystery schools or ancient traditions, and what has been on the scientific method of, you know, transparent laboratory protocols and and replicable results, those two disciplines are now coming with outcomes, and they're starting to integrate and come together. Mm. And this is one area, you know, by studying the intelligent civilizations of soul of the soul from a science point of view, that I've been able to learn a great deal through the conceptualization and the writing of this book, and the absorption of case data, like the article that I just started reading at the beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel that would integrate with what's going on here on this wacky planet?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, and part of the wackiness of the planet, I think, is that we have so many memes, so many competing memes, and from an exopolitical standpoint, if you look at the organized religions, for example. Mm-hmm. Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and then, you know, some of the minor ones, Mormonism, you know, all those sort of things. Mm-hmm. There's a case to be made, and, you know, it requires one to go in depth in each case that these religions have all been seeded by extraterrestrial interventions, some of which are quite mischievous.
No kidding.
You know,
as the Gnostics talked about many years ago.
Yeah. So that humanity has been pitted against each other.
Yes.
Because there have been so many contradictory memes set up, and it's the extraterrestrials disguising themselves as, quote, the divine in front of these you know, superstitious primitive tribes. and all of a sudden we have the conflict of civilizations of Islam versus Christianity versus Judaism, which is exploited and exacerbated by the elite for their purposes.
Absolutely.
So in the long run, the solution to this is for science to science and spirituality to come together and to provide a coherent, replicable story of the reality that we're in, so that every school child and, you know, everyone from infancy gets sort of a user manual as to, oh, this is your condition. You're born as a human on planet Earth, and this is your condition as far as science knows it, and it's a multidimensional one, and you've incarnated here, and this seems to be the case, you know, and that's like, you know, part of your core curriculum at home, and then in the schools, you know. And now, to get to that level, which is, and I'm sort of reading here from chapters. I mean, I'm not reading, but I'm paraphrasing chapters in my book. Exopolitics, which is how I say this is how we can get beyond all of the confusion that has been sown here by the exopolitical interventions which have been, you know, quite directed toward conflict.
Yes, conflict and enslavement. Perhaps.
Yes.
Yes, of the humanity, and from what I can see, it's done a good job, and it has been doing a good job probably for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not looking at something that just happened overnight.
Right.
This is something that has been and is very cleverly engineered, and it is designed and has multiple options in terms of where it will, where it is going to dump us at the railroad station on the other side of the tracks.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Civilization One, and even Gordon Duff, who is the senior editor of Veterans Today magazine, is coming out and talking openly about that. On George Nuri's show, he said that he was told that Civilization One exists, and that there is a vast chasm between what is being the research and technology which is available. And he went so far as to say that there were skirmishes already. There were alien battles going on. And a lot of the things that he said pertain to information that he pulled from having viewed the documents that people refer to as MK Ultra. And one of the things that he talked about was time travel and, bilocation and the rest of it, and the technology of quantum physics. Apparently, they're looking at building a Hadron Collider type of facility that is twice the size of the one that currently exists. So apparently, the God particle wasn't enough, or they didn't get it big enough to get the smallest particle. So a consortium is building a larger collider in the near future. So that's something he said openly. So there people are looking for these things, and I think you and I would be more inclined to the thought that what we are looking for is right under our nose, and it's probably even within us, and that the multidimensional world is here now, and that we can tap into it spiritually.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and until the stranglehold that is keeping control over all the institutions and over the globe and in every aspect, until that's released, and it doesn't look like it's going to be released easily, because those who have all the power and the money and control are not going to let go of the technology and release it. I asked if free energy was going to be coming out in the near future, and one of my sources said no, it's not. It's not going to be coming out.
Yeah, yeah. So whither we are headed is a question that people have many different theories about.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're headed toward a dystopia, a catastrophic future,
right,
a positive future. But just to examine some of the hidden influences, I think that you were referring to, we have a number of hidden influences.
Mm-hmm.
I like to call the kind of governmental system that we're in the exploitative Anunnaki Illuminati exploitative hierarchy.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It goes back at least 280,000 years.
Yes.
I was fortunate enough to have been invited by Michael Tellinger to speak at a conference in Johannesburg in November of 2011. And right after that, we went, he took us down to Adam's Calendar.
Which is
where the Anunnaki initially landed, and they've dated it back to 280,000 years ago. And there's a calendric site there, and it's all lined up to various planets and various galaxies and star systems, and it's set up with stone circles that go all the way to Zimbabwe. That the Anunnaki had apparently set up a teleportation system by which they teleported the gold that had been mined by the Homo sapiens that they had dumbed down from 12-strand DNA down to 2-strand DNA, and sort of marking us for wage slaves for the last 280,000 years. And teleporting the gold off of the planet, either to their planet directly or to ships. Then their rule has been transmitted down to the Egyptian pharaohs and then down to the kings and queens. And so nothing has changed on this planet for 280,000 years because it's still all about the gold. And there's a lot of evidence that the Anunnaki are still taking the gold off the planet.
Right.
And then there's a second layer of ETs, and those are the that's a more recent sort of predatory invasion by the Draco reptilians and Orion Greys.
Right.
And that's been highly documented. And then there are all sorts of stories about whether or not there is a liberation of the planet going on by the advanced human galactic governance councils, the Andromedans, the Milky Way galaxy, the Alpha Centaurians, and Pleiadians, and others that are now fighting back the reptilian and Orion Gray timeline takeover of this quadrant of the galaxy, including Mars and Earth, in this solar system. That the quote New World Order is actually sort of the time space rollout of the Orion Greys, Draco reptilians and the Greys. So then there's that level of kind of takeover stuff going on. So the issue is how we humans that are now apparently under a dispensation, because we do have positive intervention by advanced human extraterrestrial galactic governance councils. We can see their photos of their ships around the sun as they come in through portals there. We do have influences that are on our side. So the next 4 to 5 years are going to be very interesting because it's a transition, and we aren't fully alone. We're the target of multiple predators, our own elite, the unseen reptilians and Dracos and Anunnaki, but also positive advanced human ETs that apparently are intervening on our side, and they're helping create a positive future. That's kind of where the hope is coming from, and one can adduce, positive evidence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For that.
Well, one of my guests that you've had on your show, George Kavassalis, talked about, you know, the various galactic groups and the ones that he's discovered cannot be trusted, the more conservative ones, who have
right.
their own agenda and don't realize that they themselves have been grafted onto the original Tree of Life by the false demigod and the Archons. So it gets all muddied up, and then there's the ascension of Gaia Sophia, the planetary divine being herself.
Yeah.
And so when you throw that into the mix, then you've got all kinds of possibilities that are juicy and are we going into an organic evolution into the future? Is this the in-breath of God, as the Hindus say, or... You know, is it a bit of all of it? Do we each maybe have our own, are we all gods in our own universe and we simply, beam up to our own universe after this experience is over? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot going on this planet, and it certainly isn't all what it looks like it is.
So on balance, I tend to think, I tend to look at things from a positive point of view, and that looking at it, things are a lot better than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and the oppression is a lot less, and we have a lot of collective power, and the awakened humanity is there's a much larger critical mass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the cosmic forces, you know, we're just at the right sort of position now, because we know from studies that go back 500 years at the time of the solar maximum, which we're going through now, 2012, 2013 to 2014, with all of the sunspot cycles, well, that is a time at which there's extreme creativity, at which there's a demand for social justice, for a great deal of positive social change,
mm-hmm.
That large numbers of people are mobilized and are demanding social justice.
Mm-hmm.
So now is the time really to be outspoken,
yes.
and to really begin to demand these things, because it's in the cosmic order. Even in the more kind of areas where there's been extreme cover-up and the data is very sketchy, such as in the area of whether or not the sun has a twin star.
Oh, right.
Right. Well, we know from a statistical standpoint that 50% of the solar systems in the galaxy have twin stars. And that a solar system with a single star is the exception.
Yeah.
And so there's data, more and more data, to suggest that our sun may have a twin star, which may be a brown dwarf. And the data is very hidden and very confusing, but it is data that, if one has been used to this type of research, there are patterns there that are very familiar. For example, many of the astronomers that have been studying this area publicly have been murdered or have died under suspicious circumstances, so that there's a huge government cover-up of the actual data as to whether... we do have a twin star, which is now approaching the inner solar system, and which over the next number of years may come into the inner solar system as close perhaps as 2.85 AU, which is one of the possibilities. That's about 180 million miles. And if that happens, there's so much attraction between the two suns that our sun becomes very active, lots of solar flares, lots of solar storms that in turn cause great turbulence on our Earth, on our planet, including a possible shift of the axis.
Yes.
And so these are the very real possibilities. The elite, and this is highly documented, for, you know, have actually spent probably over $3 trillion since the early 1970s and built over 170 deep underground military bases.
Yes.
For their the political and economic elite, for the monarchs and the bloodline bankers,
That's right.
For the governments, for the entire military,
yep.
For the police forces, for the hospital workers and doctors,
yep.
For the scientists, the ones who make bombs and GMO crops right. And all those great things,
Oh yeah.
And for all their technocrats. And the plan is to leave, their plan is to leave the rest of the population on the surface, and it's a great depopulation event.
Yes.
This is how they get rid of the rest of the population, and then they can come out and have a great, the planet as an elite theme park.
Right.
Which
That's
is,
right.
you know, now,
That's right.
now, however,
yeah,
and
yeah, Laura Eisenhower talks about that. She was asked to go to Mars.
Yeah, exactly. So, now,
yeah.
now the irony is that Mars is more of a hazard than Earth because
uh-huh.
because the twin star comes right up to Mars's orbit,
wow.
And right now the scuttlebutt is that the teleporter between Earth and Mars is very busy, and they're evacuating all of the secret bases at Mars.
Oh, really? No, I
yeah,
have not heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah. That was a whistleblower on Kerry Cassidy's show.
Oh.
Now, you know, who knows whether that's true or not, but
well,
that's
right.
just, the, you know, that's one of the latest scuttlebutts going. Now, as you know, Zany, I, or Lance, because you were there at the UFO con, I've advanced a thesis, and this is how we have the thesis of the both Planet X and Nemesis being true,
right.
and a positive timeline, and
yeah.
that is because the dimensional ecology. The advanced human ETs, the consortium of Pleiadians and Alpha Centaurians and Sirians that in fact created and developed Homo sapiens as a 12-strand DNA light being in the third dimension and have been caretaking planet Earth for eons, you can go now, and this is part of the photographs that I showed there, The listening audience can go to our website, exopolitics.com, and you'll see the article there, and you can see the photographs of the planet-sized UFOs coming in through the triangular interdimensional portal on the sun, and they're all doing all this kind of stuff to the sun. They're zapping it with laser beams and doing all this stuff, And I posit that they're building a shield to shield the solar system and the planets from the effects of the flyby of the twin star.
Mm-hmm.
And concurrent with this, as supportive evidence, in earlier in 2012, the Mexican government released ancient Mayan artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
Which are also pictured on the website, which show, and it's amazing because these are thousands of years old. They show ET craft flying around the sun, coming out of triangular portals in the sun, and shielding the planets from a celestial object that is flying into the solar system and kind of, you know, shielding it from that celestial object. So there's a precedent here. Mm-hmm. That is what the extraterrestrials have been doing. Mm-hmm. They've been protecting Earth at certain times. Mm-hmm. And they're apparently not going to allow these scheming elites to carry out their 174 deep underground base depopulation of the planet,
right.
You know, just because they decided to keep a secret.
Right, right. I'm with you on that one.
You know.
Yes, I'm with you.
Right. Yeah. So from that perspective, once this information starts to get out, I mean, you know, here we are as public broadcasters yourself and, you know, a community of public broadcasters, myself and all our community, this is what mm-hmm. we talk about.
That's right.
Day in and day out.
Right.
And this is going to start getting out more and more that, hey, you know, there's a planet out here. This is what the ETs are doing. There's 174 deep underground military bases, which were built with $3 trillion worth of money by the Nixon administration forward, by the Bilderbergers, by the Rothschilds, by the Queen, by David Rockefeller, and it was for them, and they were keeping the secret. And now, you know, so they're going to lose all respect, and, you know, so that this is how sort of a collective karma works. Now, I'm projecting that visit, that vision. There's one factor that we haven't mentioned yet.
Okay.
And this is kind of the elephant in the room, the elephant in the living room.
All right.
And it's called the moon.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because there's a lot of evidence that the moon is an artificial satellite.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
It was pushed in there by our controllers.
Yes.
And that our mind control matrix is run from the moon.
Moon. Absolutely.
And that's why things never change and why we're in this reincarnation cycle that the kind of the soul depot.
Yes.
From the for an unconscious reincarnation is just on the other side of the moon, kind of on the far side of the moon.
Absolutely.
And so it's like until we get either the humans or some larger collective force to move that moon out, you know, we are under a lunar matrix here
that is
keeping humanity in prison, and that seems to be the case.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And there are things that back that up. George Cavazos talks about this. David Icke talks about it. And in my early studies of Gurdjieff and Uspensky in the 70s, even George Gurdjieff said that souls cannot leave this solar system. They go to the moon. And he said, we're born with the ability to complete ourselves, to reach full consciousness, but most people don't do it. And so the soul is not strong enough to leave the field, the magnetic field within the moon, and they're literally drawn there and then regurgitated. They're put back in. I'm guessing that it's by some extraterrestrial race that manages the incarnation of souls. There was Stanley Kubrick showed that black monolith on one of the planets. Well, why couldn't that black monolith be on the other side of the moon where the souls are collected and recycled or recontainerized, as the Greys like to say? You know, we know that the technology exists to remove the soul from the body and put it in a container. That's one of the premises of living eternally. The elite can pull their soul out and put it in another container and go on and on and on. So these are all things that we can think about. And personally, I would like to break out of the wheel of life and death that has been spinning around here for so long, and nothing ever changes. And I think that's also tied into the 32-degree tilt of the Earth. I think that was done intentionally, and I think it needs to. I think that will straighten up somehow during the pole shift, and that George seems to think that the moon will be removed, that the artificial base, which we look at as the moon, will be removed, and that will completely alter the cycles of birth. Women's cycles will change. They will no longer be forced to, you know, go through these horrible things that they go through with giving birth. It could be a whole new world. You know,
well, what a vision. Yeah. What a vision.
When the controls are gone, we are magnificent beings of light and love, and we have the power of empathy and of caring and feeling for one another, and we have abilities, even with our little old two strands left. You know, we've been compressed down, stripped naked, and dumbed down with chemtrails, fluoride, and the rest of it, and we're still more, we're still magnificent, and we are still stronger and more beautiful than those who think they control us.
What a beautiful vision! So that is really a vision to hold,
yeah.
And to begin to construct a statement of the liberation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would start by naming the moon. You know,
yes.
And by naming these things, because they have been hidden for so long,
yes.
And but now, if we can, you know, as we can name them in a statement and begin to talk about it, so that people don't think you're a lunatic.
Right.
No pun intended.
Right.
You know. Gee.
Yeah. Yeah,
I wonder what the origin of that term is.
I'll look it up. I'll Google it after.
Yeah, but I mean, a lunatic that is affected by the moon, right?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
There you go. The entire human race is affected by the moon.
and mind control comes from there. George said that he was aware that the artificial intelligence operates from the moon, and that those who are running that particular station gave the military two of those devices to use on the planet for planetary control. So mind control is an ever-pervasive and invisible event that, is going on all the time, and the easiest way to halt it is to remove the sources of it, if you can. There's so much we can't remove, but we can take back control over the information that comes into our being. And television is probably the least trustworthy of all of them.
Right. There is information out there that just as, you know, in these coming years, 2013, 14, 15, 16, there's a lot of people who say, oh, it's going to be so catastrophic. We're going to have the economic breakdown. We're going to have the earth changes, all of that. But there is information that along with this comes the sweeping changes.
Yes.
And
yes.
Comes positive intervention.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Out of it, and I think that in the course of this hour, we've discussed the very sorts of things and sorts of barriers and kind of the infrastructure of control, starting with the moon, going to the monarchies, going to the banking systems, going to the hidden grays and the Illuminati and the reptilian bases, you know, all of these things that are obstacles that can be cleared.
Yes.
And so that there is a way, and these statements have been made because for example, the Council of Eight, which was a reported Galactic Governance Council that appeared over New York City on October 2010, I think, October 13th, and that had been predicted by lifelong NORAD officer Stanley Fullam in his book. I was able to interview him, and I did a number of articles, and there's a whole period that says, look, from 2013 to 14 to 15, there are going to be a lot of Earth changes, and there's going to be the downfall of the old system. And out of this is going to become much more egalitarian, sharing, community-based system, and the positive ETs are going to come to the fore. And so that we come out of this period with a lot of those issues solved. Let's hope and let's envision that the moon gets taken out.
Yes. I'm aligned with you on that one. And you know, that the Earth and the Gaia Sophia sits up, takes notice, and corrects her spin. So we don't have this 26,500-year cycle where we go through all the signs of the planets. That's not necessary. Let's do something new. Let's break out of the old mold and do something that isn't cycle after cycle after cycle that just keeps going over and over. I believe that's a controlled and contrived event to keep consciousness in matter. It's enslaved in matter, and it has no freedom that way. It doesn't have as much freedom. So I'm totally aligned with you on that.
Oh, excellent.
We started it today. The moon goes.
Excellent. The moon goes. Great.
That's it.
Hallelujah.
The moon, Alice. Well, Alfred, our hour has flown by on angel wings. So if you could just mention your site before we go.
I just want
to thank you so much for being on the show, because I just love talking to you and I love the work you're doing.
Great. Yeah. It's very easy. People can go to exopolitics.com.
Easy. And there's a wealth of material there to investigate. And I was having so much fun doing that today. So thank you again. We'll be in touch. And enjoy the solar eclipse that's coming.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again, Alfred.
Certainly.
All right. Good night, everybody.